KALW.
This victory came because we were organizing with people inside and outside who helped make it possible.
The pandemic, plus advocates, organizers, and a determined DA all made it possible to shut down an unsafe San Francisco jail. But it also created new problems.
It turned out to be a very difficult time to lose a quarter of the beds.
We hear about the meaning of safety in the latest installment of The Progressive Prosecutor. Then San Francisco drag artist Bebe Sweetbriar talks about the power of drag.
There is something about the magnetism and the interest of drag queens that people listen to the things that also come out of our mouths.
What's coming up? I'm Hannah Baba, and this is Cross Currents. In his first few months in office, San Francisco District Attorney Chesa Boudin moved quickly and decisively. He eliminated money bail and ended gang enhancements. That means prosecutors can no longer make people pay cash to be released from jail or ask for tougher punishments for gang members. All this was relatively easy, but these moves were just part of a much bigger promise. Boudin had pledged to reduce the county's incarcerated population so dramatically he could close down an entire jail. It seemed impossible. Then the pandemic hit. In this installment of The Progressive Prosecutor, KALW's Holly J. McDeed starts us off inside the Hall of Justice.
The Hall of Justice is the towering, blocky gray building in San Francisco's South of Market neighborhood. It's become kind of like a symbol of a justice system that many people think is completely dysfunctional. The jail inside has been compared to Alcatraz or the prison in The Shawshank Redemption. It doesn't help that it's also seismically unsafe, and yes, raw sewage has filled its floors.
Yeah, I'm waiting on them to file their lawsuit because we're going to be a part of it too.
Back in 2017, I went to the top of that building and visited the jail. One inmate told me he was eager to sue the city over these conditions, which inmates have.
I mean, I'm a germaphobe. I don't like germs at all. I mean, I don't like to be in a dirty environment, so just the thought of it, the feces being able to get on you, or you just sleep. Just imagine you being asleep at 3 in the morning and you hear bloop, 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 and then you just hear hella water running. And then the water, and you gotta jump up. Everybody gotta jump up out their sleep 3 in the morning.
And it wasn't just the sewage leaks that troubled the activists on the outside pushing to shut the jail down. Jose Bernal is an organizer with the Ella Baker Center for Human Rights. He was incarcerated in San Francisco jails almost a decade ago, and he spent a lot of time in an isolated cell.
The memory of me banging on the safety cell door, begging for toilet paper, is something that infuriates me, something that is very harmful, you know, just remembering that and the dignity that is taken away from folks.
Bernal says the 2.5 years he spent incarcerated nearly broke him.
You know, 2.5 years is nothing now. You know, like I just look and people tell you it's nothing, but it was everything. Every single day was an eternity.
If he didn't have a family to come home to, he says he's sure it would have destroyed him.
What I did when I came out was I started getting involved. I started learning more about the carceral system, the prison industrial complex, why, you know, folks that were in jail looked like me.
In 2015, the city was offered $80 million to build a new jail to replace the decrepit one. But activists like Bernal opposed that plan.
When, you know, you have a jail, you know, there's something that we say, if they build it, they will fill it.
London Breed opposed the new jail for the same reason while she was a supervisor.
More than a building, we need to tear down the system of mass incarceration it represents.
Breed's own brother spent years at the jail inside the Hall of Justice.
I am not going to support continuing to lock up people who have mental illness and need treatment, not imprisonment. My brother had a drug problem. He needed treatment, not to be locked up.
Boudin's predecessor, George Gascon, supported closing the jail by building a behavioral health center for people in the criminal justice system. But activists opposed that plan too. They argued it would be used to detain more people. Years later, the jail inside the Hall of Justice was still open. When I spoke with Boudin during the campaign, he pledged to change that.
Right now,
The jail is constantly full of people who will be there for a week or less, and who, when they get released, will have no support, no supervision, no services. And we know the outcome is that many cases, in the majority of cases, they'll be arrested again in short order.
Boudin said he could significantly reduce the jail population by ending money bail, reducing the number of people cycling in and out of the jail, and getting more people into mental health or drug treatment facilities instead. He even proposed using the city's juvenile justice center to house people from ages 18 to 22. The way Boudin talked about transforming the justice system captured the attention of organizers like Jose Bernal. Bernal says he never thought in a million years he'd vote for a district attorney.
You know, because usually they're the state, you know, they are the part of the big chunk of that, you know, mass incarceration machine. Historically, actors within the system, have not uplifted the interest of our communities and our folks.
But Boudin seemed different.
I had not in my lifetime heard a district attorney say the things that Chessa said.
They were both pushing to shut down the same jail. And when Boudin won, he had more power to try.
But listen, we have our work cut out for us. This is not going to be easy. It's not going to be easy. I need every one of you to hold me accountable to those promises. Will you do that? Will you do that?
And they did. When Boudin took office, the activist group Critical Resistance gave Boudin 100 days to make major progress, and they released report cards to track that effort. Then the pandemic happened, and that changed everything.
There was a great deal of concern in the air. It was palpable. You could cut the concern with a knife.
That's Armando Miranda, who works for Boudin in the DA's office. He remembers when Mayor London Breed ordered residents to shelter in place.
I think we were all filled with a level of uncertainty. What does that mean? How is this going to impact our jobs?
As this was happening, someone inside the jail began ringing the alarm bell. Lisa Pratt is the doctor in charge of health services for people incarcerated in San Francisco. She has a history of fighting for the health and conditions of inmates in Los Angeles County and San Quentin.
Everybody's life is equally important. Regardless of where they sit in the criminal justice system. Now, that's hard to say in a state that has a death penalty, but, that is the ethos of that we approach our work with.
Jails are uniquely conducive for spreading a virus because there is a steady flow of people coming in and going out, booked and released.
There's a lot of churn in a jail. It's almost like being in an emergency room.
So Pratt wrote a letter to the city's sheriff, police chief, and district attorney advocating for the release of inmates over 60 or with underlying health conditions. This created an opening for Boudin. He had wanted to dramatically reduce the jail population, and now a doctor was demanding that. Boudin remembers the sense of urgency in Pratt's letter.
And I'm quoting here, an outbreak in the San Francisco County Jail could result in catastrophic outcomes for those staff and incarcerated persons in high-risk groups.
Pratt called for reducing the jail population down to at least 800 inmates, ideally 700. In February, the average daily population at the jail was over 1,000, according to sheriff officials. It looked necessary for everyone involved to think differently about public safety. Prosecuting and keeping as many people in jail no longer seemed sustainable.
We simply don't have the capacity in this moment, with courtrooms shutting down, with members of various law enforcement agencies getting sick, with lawyers working from home, et cetera, to prosecute all the cases that we were used to prosecuting, to hold all the people in jail that we were used to holding in jail.
And Boudin's promise to dramatically reduce the jail population no longer seems so radical. Cities and counties all over the country were releasing inmates early because of the pandemic. In San Francisco, public defenders filed motions to release more inmates, and prosecutors reviewed every single case involving people in custody. The idea was to determine if alternatives to jail time were possible. Prosecutor Armando Miranda remembers working in the intake unit during this time.
I was immediately asked to prepare a database of all the cases that we were discharging because of the pandemic, because accountability is key. Right. And we're not giving people, freedom to do whatever they want to during the pandemic and take advantage of this.
Boudin's office put together a list of people who could be released either immediately or quickly. That included elderly inmates, people incarcerated for misdemeanors, and people in jail for technical violations of probation or parole.
We didn't want to have the jails filled with people for nonviolent offenses that could lead to an ultimate outbreak.
By April, according to the DA's office, the jail population had dropped to its lowest point in recent history. The pandemic made this dramatic reduction possible, but it also made things more complicated. For example, Boudin says it was difficult to place people in shelters and drug treatment facilities.
There are definitely gaps because of the need for all the agencies that run those beds, those facilities, to also create social distance within their population, the population they serve. They're all closing their doors.
Boudin says that means in some instances, people who were being released from jail were also returning to dangerous lives on the streets, which isn't safe either.
You know, we talk about public safety. Not having those beds, not having those resources hurts public safety. It makes it more likely that lives will be lost unnecessarily.
Boudin could not fix all the issues inside the jail or in the community over just a few months in office. The jail population is still disproportionately Black, and an overwhelming number of people inside still suffer from addiction and mental illness. But he proved the city could dramatically reduce the number of people in jail with enough political will. Just weeks into the pandemic, Supervisor Sandra Feuer authored legislation to close down the jail inside the Hall of Justice.
It has been 24 years since the jail was deemed to be seismically unsafe and slated for demolition, and the conditions have only gotten worse.
But Supervisor Catherine Stephanie argued closing down the jail could put public safety at risk.
For me, I feel like closing the jail at this time requires a level of risk that I'm not prepared to take.
Burglaries and homicides in San Francisco are up, but crime dropped overall in 2020. And so the city moved forward, closing down the jail inside the Hall of Justice by September. Activists were relieved.
For us, that was a momentous moment.
Kyle Neal is with Community United Against Violence, an LGBTQ anti-violence organization in San Francisco.
To see that this facility actually, after several years, and since knowing from 1996 that this facility is needed to close, it felt really relieving to see this. And also felt really surreal because we had spent 7 years organizing around this jail. This victory came because we were organizing with people inside and outside who helped make it possible.
But closing down the jail during the pandemic also created another really serious issue: less space to socially distance in other facilities. Dr. Lisa Pratt, the director of jail health services, says she understands why the jail inside the Hall of Justice was shut down, but she has to focus on what she needs right now, which is space. Pratt says when the jail closed, it turned out to be a very difficult time to lose a quarter of jail beds.
All that's done is created this very dense situation, because while we've had some people released, we haven't made strides in those ways that were important.
Less space to socially distance is a problem during a pandemic. So again, Pratt rang the alarm bells. She called on the city to reduce the jail population, this time by another 25%, down to 600 people.
Yes, I would love that.
But that hasn't happened yet, and there are a few signs that it will. Pratt wants people to remember that most people in jail have not been convicted yet.
I think when you wrap your head around that, it's really stunning to think that we could know that and then also allow the risk that we create by overcrowding a jail during a COVID epidemic.
So far, San Francisco jails have avoided the kinds of major outbreaks at places like San Quentin or the Santa Rita jail in Dublin. But with a slow vaccine rollout, Pratt is understandably worried.
I yelled out at Yoohoo when I got some information today about the movement of vaccine to the jail. And I just can't even tell you how thrilled. It's like trying to get my elderly mother, if she were still alive, I would have the same level of anxiety every day about when can I get her vaccinated that I have for the people in the jail.
But Chase Boudin says he's still proud of what his office has accomplished.
I mean, I have to say I'm in many ways thrilled with the jail population and the fact that we've been able to sustain it consistently below 800 for virtually this entire year.
Chase Aboudin is also balancing many competing demands. While some push for continuing to shrink the jail population, others have insisted that Boudin has allowed too many people out of jail. In the next installment, Chase Aboudin's first year in office ends in controversy, and critics are getting louder.
When we don't hold people accountable in our criminal justice system, as strong of an advocate as I am of reforms and giving people a second chance and helping people get on their feet, there still has to be accountability.
For Cross Currents, I'm Holly J. McDeed.
That was part three in the series, The Progressive Prosecutor, looking at San Francisco District Attorney Chase Aboudin's first year in office. It was co-reported by Christopher Agusa with help from Alice Wolfley, and you can hear every story in that series at KELW.org. You're listening to Cross Currents from KELW News. I'm Henat Baba. Bibi Sweetbriar grew up in Sacramento, then blossomed into a drag artist after hitting the San Francisco drag scene 15 years ago. She has sung and performed around the Bay Area and globally. Bibi is also an activist, co-founder of the San Francisco Queer Film Festival, and an actor. She plays a transgender woman in the series High Raith, which streams on Amazon Prime. The drama follows a diverse group of immigrants trying to figure out where they belong in American society, and it tackles issues like racism and xenophobia. KLW's Janae Darden spoke with Bibi Sweetwater about her career and her political influence as a drag artist.
So you grew up in Sacramento, and like you said, you weren't really exposed to drag culture, and you hadn't disclosed that you were gay.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the passing of your mother that inspired you to come out.
Well, I think my mother was like 54 when she passed, and my mother had always been ill in my lifetime. My mother became ill when I was three. So as she explained it to me in a way that I can understand when I was young, is that she probably would not live as long as other people's parents would live, you know, bar any type of accident. It seemed to me like, you know, my mother has so much life to live and so many more things to do. And I think she wanted to do so many more things. And then, you know, it was cut short. You know, at that time, I was going through things. I was married. I had two little daughters, and I was unhappy. And I really wasn't for sure why that was for a while. But then when I did understand what was going on with me, just kind of thought life is too short to live a life that not only brings unhappiness to you, but to everyone around you. And there was no way I could contribute to the happiness of my children if I wasn't happy. So that's kind of, you know, so I had to live my truth at that point. I figured, you know, life is too short for us not to live our truth.
It's unfortunate she died so young, but she left you with this gift of, you know, of living, as you say, living a quality life. How did you come up with the name Bibi Sweetbriar?
I had just watched a Will and Grace show where, are you familiar with Will and Grace?
Absolutely.
Where Jack and what's her name? The Karen were talking about porn names, how you come up with your porn name. So we did that. And it was, you know, the first pet you can remember having as a kid or as an adult, your first pet you can remember having, and the street, the first street you can remember living on. And my dog when I was growing up was called Bibi, and I lived on Sweetbriar Way in Sacramento.
Oh my goodness.
And it opened up so much for me to do from a activism standpoint. And I don't know what it is, to be really honest with you, because my ideology, what I stand for and believe in, and what I represent as B.B. Sweetbriar is no different than when I take the wig off, hip pads and all that. It's no different. But there is something about the magnetism and the interest of drag queens that people listen to the things that also come out of our mouths. You know, I have met with mayors, I have met with supervisors, I've met with people in the city who make decisions for all of its people, and they've paid attention.
Why do you think people do listen more to you in drag? That's interesting.
I do know that many of us, when we are in drag, we consider us wearing armor. We feel stronger. We feel, many feel stronger and feel more able. There are a lot of people that I know who in drag, their personalities are big, loud, bold. But then when they're out of drag, they're very, you know, shy. Their voice is small. And so, you know, being in drag gives them this power and this ability to do. That's never been. I've always been gregarious and always been kind of out there. Because I think we all go through life wanting to make sure that our time on this earth made a difference in some way. Large or small, it made a difference. And I think BB's allowing me that opportunity.
That's really interesting. You know, you are a public figure, but children will humble you. And it was funny. What did your daughter say when she first saw you in drag?
Oh, she was like, because she was doing pageants as I was saying at that time. And I remember coming out of the bathroom. My youngest child is non-binary. He's like, you know, that's so cool. And then my oldest was like, all this time, you could have been doing my makeup. You know, and I just thought, okay, if I can get past them two, then I was okay. And that's basically was my barometer that I was using, you know.
Okay, so you sing, you perform, you're so talented, and you act. And so you're in this series on Amazon called Hyreus, mm-hmm. And it tackles some tough issues. Talk more about the series.
I love this mini series. I hope there's a second season. Primarily, the show is about immigration here in America, and it covers the stories of a few characters from different parts of the world about how they navigate their lives or how they have to navigate their lives in America. My character, who happens to be trans, is the sister of a young brother who marries a Middle Eastern woman so she can get her citizenship and stay in the country. Mm. You know, her motivation is to stay in the country. His motivation is to get some money, you know. And then my interaction is to do what's right.
So Bibi, what do you want to do next? What other dreams do you have for your career, for your artistry?
Well, honestly, that's a real good question, Janae. And it's pertinent at this time because I think the one thing the pandemic has done for a lot of people has given us the time because we live in this rush, do this, got to earn money, got to do blah, 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 blah. Well, the pandemic's taken that away from some of us, you know. And I think for me, I think as a drag performer that I'm ending my time in that. So a little bit more maybe behind the scenes and not so much on the in the front, you know, but I'm still gone, baby.
That was drag artist Bibi Sweetbriar speaking with KLW's Janae Darden. Bibi's series, Hyreus, is streaming on Amazon Prime. Find more information at KLW.org. Today's Cross Currents team includes Azul Ekman, David Exume, Sonia Narang, and Marissa Ortega Welch. Our engineers are James Rollins and Gabe Graben. Production manager is Shirin Adil. Managing editor is David Boyer. News director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.